Hi, I'm Lisa McEwen.
And I'm Lisa Anita Wagner. And together, we are...
She's Gotta Have It! Exclamation mark! For little turns. Welcome back to She's Gotta Have It!
Exclamation mark.
Exclamation mark. In which we talk about Californication, Season 1, Episode 7, Girls Interrupted. Shall we dive right into what we want?
Let's do what we want. I will start.
Mm-hmm.
I have a photo book idea with a collaborator, and we knew we were going to print it up in some format, and I have found a company in the States that makes one-off art books. Usually they're made for films, like if you need a real proper-looking book. So yeah, I now want to get our photo book idea printed up as a really gorgeous piece for exhibition. So it was kind of just cool to find that, and now I'm really, instead of thinking it as a sort of $50 photo book, I really see it kind of like a coffee table book. And then, as I mentioned upstairs, I've been nominated for an art fellowship, and that would come with a prize that would actually pay for the book. So I feel like I really want to work towards that. If I don't get that, I want to figure out some other funding to get this. Yeah, so this idea that I have in my head just taken up to another notch of an exhibition piece.
Amazing. What do I want? I really want to write some kind of personal essay. I want to start writing more for public publications as opposed to academic publications. And I think the thing that makes the most sense for me to start with next is the piece that I am currently sort of writing / pitching about my experience meeting my bio family this summer. I actually just was inspired to start. I finally have come down a little bit from my hectic semester, and last week I just started wanting to write, I wrote a bit more of it. I'm not sure who I'm going to pitch it to next, but I keep getting good suggestions because I keep meeting journalists and writers and freelancers who hear about my story and they're like, yeah, you have to write this. And so I'm not sure who's going to pick it up, who's going to pay me for it, but I'm excited to write that because I really miss that kind of personal, public writing.
Mm-hmm.
It is very much my jam, and so I want to just do more of it. I say this as I'm gearing up to finish my dissertation and submit in the spring, but you know, we all have to have a hobby, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
In addition to this, which is also awesome.
And yeah, you had talked about maybe even somehow talking about it sort of in a podcast format too.
Yeah.
Is that still something you're thinking of?
I was at a dinner party and I met a couple of journalists who are pretty kind of seasoned journalists. And I say journalists, I mean they don't write about the news, but they write about current events and different kinds of cultural things. One of them was a food writer. And I wasn't sure what I should do next. And I asked them for their advice. And one of them said, write the article first and then do the podcast. And I think that that's right. I think the article is the easiest thing. It's the thing I have the most control over. I can't wait to do a podcast about it because I think it really lends itself to a podcast, because part of what I'm realizing is that it's actually kind of interesting to tell my version of the story, in part because it is unusual in its lack of drama. It was very eventful, but there isn't, I had great parents. I had really good people as biological parents who gave me up for, good reasons, good responsible reasons. And everyone turned out to be lovely and is getting along, and it's all kind of this wonderful, happy story. But my experience of being adopted, because I had such great parents raising me, was very... it didn't feel dramatic. And every time somebody found out that I was adopted, I would get this reaction oh, how do you feel about it? And it's hard to answer that question because I don't have obvious feelings about it. because I never felt like it was weird. I found out before I was creating memories. I found out when I was 2 years old, so it was just something that has been normal for me my whole life. I never felt rejected. I never felt resentful. Like, that's a thing. That's a kind of cliched, common kind of reaction. And some people do feel that way, and it's very understandable. But that's never how I felt. And so I just thought, oh, I have no feelings about it. And what I'm realizing now is I did have a lot of feelings about it, but because they weren't obvious negative feelings, it's actually really difficult to pinpoint, because I've also never experienced not being adopted. So how do you explain what that's like when it feels just so normal? And writing this piece is kind of like letting me dig into that. And I actually think that that in itself is interesting. And also just the story of my biological parents is interesting. The story of my adopted parents is interesting. Like, just the story of all of it. Like, everyone has got like a really interesting piece to add to this like bigger picture. And I think that would lend itself nicely to kind of being built up in podcast episodes. But that, I think, will come later after I finish my dissertation.
Yes.
Right now I can just be alone in my apartment writing this piece. So yeah, that's what I want.
Lovely.
I also want a manicure, but I gave that to myself today.
Nice. I want a manicure and a pedicure. I want to go get one done, like sit in a vibrating chair and just have,
I want that sometime over the holidays when I have time.
Lovely. Shall we into the episode?
Sure. Let's talk about the episode. And when you ride, call me as you go, drop to the floor and I will blow you off. So, girls interrupted. Hank is disturbed by Becca's negative reaction towards the concept of happy endings, even more so when he finds out it's partially his fault. Marcy comes up with the idea of a threesome with Charlie and Danny, but it ends unexpectedly.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a pretty good summary of that episode. Initial thoughts.
The sex scene that was mentioned that ends up having a really, for me, felt very visceral scene of, a nipple clamp.
So, yeah, let's...
just give a little bit of context. But that just really stuck out for me.
Yeah.
And also because when I see something well done, I literally feel like it is happening to me. Which is interesting, really good as for me being an actor, but really like that literally is almost like I literally feel as if my nipple were ripped out when I see it. So
what happens, listeners, is that Marcy decides, in reaction to Charlie's a clumsy attempt to try and talk to her about spicing up their sex life, Marcy's idea is then to actively include Danny because she wants to fulfill her fantasy of sleeping with a woman. And Charlie freaks out about this, but kind of gets boxed in and can't really say no without... he doesn't have an obviously good reason to say no. And so they go with it. And so Danny and Marcy... what I think is interesting is that Danny and Marcy are having, like, their own kind of interaction where they're, like, making out, I guess. And Charlie's watching, which is just so... the whole scene is very self-consciously male-gazy because Charlie is just, like, watching them and then also adding... like, it's almost like he's being an annoying director where he's sort of killing the mood by chiming in and saying, like, no, don't do that, do this, or do this, not that. And Marcy kind of gets a bit deflated at one point and says to Danny, what do you think? Should we include him? And Danny's like, it's your fantasy. Like... Charlie's taking something that's ostensibly from Marcy and making it all about him. Like, he's centering himself in that. And so they finally end up including him, probably just shut him the fuck up. And at one point, Danny pulls out some nipple clamps from her purse, uses them on Charlie, and Marcy and Charlie are unwittingly attached, and Marcy gets up to get something from the table and rips off Charlie's nipple. It is viscerally unpleasant to watch, but as you say, like, really well done.
Really well done. And it is almost the most poetic, perfect way to end that, them having that sex scene in the first way.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I just reminded of, in the opening of the show, there's two shots that I feel like, in a way, sum up the show. When Hank is running with the flowers and falls over. And then also when Hank is trying to hold what looks like his manuscript and it's flying around.
Yes,
and
this is in the opening credits.
The opening credits.
Yeah.
So it's just an aside, but this moment almost seems like the perfect, like, it's almost like sums up that the Runkle experience in this moment in that same way. Yeah, the way it was going kind of good. He's trying to drive it and then it just goes like
off the rails.
Really off the rails. Yeah, because it was so visceral and I literally, you had to go, I missed Danny's expression and you went back for me so I could see it again. But it's interesting, all that gay stuff you talked about, I literally just missed that because it was so intense for me. But, mm-hmm. and as you pointed out, Danny's always been almost like a parody of the female gaze, the way she first sent those sexy shots to him. Mm-hmm. And it seems very, not parody, but very, comment-y on it.
Yeah.
About everything
she's,
about
she's
her.
Very self-consciously evoking something she knows will get a particular reaction from Charlie.
Yes.
And manipulating him in that way. Yeah, absolutely. To the point where it's ludicrous. Like, it's almost a parody where it's so over the top and yet absolutely gets the reaction she's looking for. It was just interesting to me to see Charlie kind of, like, he's a bad participant, right? Because he is very, like, do it this way, not that way. He's making it worse by trying to control it and trying to make it about what is erotic for him in that moment instead of letting them figure out what's erotic for them.
I got the feeling, too, that because he's so guilty about what happened before, I feel like he's nervous to just let them get any kind of connection.
Yes.
That's also part of it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I had forgotten about this too. I feel like just in this episode, I know stuff changes, but Marcy and Danny sort of had a sweet connection. Yeah. And it's such an interesting sex scene. And again, poor Marcy at the end still doesn't get really laid. Like, it's such a, yeah.
Oh yeah. Poor Marcy in this season.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Danny just ends, like, the look on her face is so amused. Just like, what? How did you guys manage to make such a mess of this so fast? 2 seconds after she brings out the nipple clamps, suddenly, like, somebody has to go to the ER. Yeah.
A Runkle. So, yeah, that was, another just tight, like, bunch of moments that really give you a really good feeling of everything of that's been going on with them.
Yeah. And then with Hank and Karen, I think it was actually nice. In this episode, I think we get a little bit more feeling of their dynamic, but also a little bit more of Karen. Like, it's still very watered down. It's still very flat, I find, Karen's character, because, I don't know, she just seems so girlish in some ways. Like, when she's, like, being whimsical about architecture. So I don't quite believe that she's an architect.
I thought she was some kind of interior designer, just a feeling. I didn't know she was one.
Yeah. And so he's trying to hire her because, and this has only been vaguely alluded to, I think we find out more explicitly later, the way that Karen and Bill met was that Karen was building Bill's house, and that Karen's specialty is that she's very good at architecture that is also very, like, sustainable and, like, energy efficient. So part of the reason that Hank got her this job was because the director of his movie, former director of his movie, wanted an addition, but he also wanted that addition to be, like, environmentally sustainable. And so Karen's kind of the perfect person for that. And so that was the backstory there. She sort of seems very subdued and very kind of like lacking in confidence in certain ways in her approach to architecture. Like, he asks her to be his architect and she kind of acts like she's in high school and she just won a prize or something. Like, and yet what was interesting to me later is that when Mia calls, she first calls Hank and Hank's like, you know, you cried wolf already, I don't believe you. She ends up calling Karen, and Hank finds this out when he arrives at Karen's for what is supposed to be Karen's celebratory dinner for getting this architecture job. And Karen's running out of the house, and she's like, I have to go help Mia. They go to the teacher's house, where Mia is once again drunk and, in fact, passed out because she's, like, taken a bunch of pills. And Karen's reaction in that context was very satisfying for me, because it is true that we've seen the backstory of how Mia is kind of using this situation to sort of, as a bit of a cry for help, as a bit of a manipulative tactic. However, she's still 16 years old, and this is still her fucking high school teacher.
Teacher, yeah.
And the teacher's like, this is not how it looks. She's being manipulative. This is, like, this is bullshit. And Karen gets up, and she's like a lion. She's like a mama lion in that moment where she's like, are you fucking kidding me? You, and she, like, pushes him. It's kind of like the episode where it's at the fundraiser, and she's just, like, ready to kind of, like lay into him. And she's like, you are her teacher. People trusted you. And it was just like, yes, because that is exactly how I would react in that moment. It reminds me a lot of, like, Me Too stuff, where, like, people who have felt like they've been invited into sexual situations with people that they are working with and yet are still taking advantage of a power differential, then blame the person who's got less power in that situation, who's often the woman, and say, like, well, she was manipulating me. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, are you really pretending like you didn't have agency in this and that this isn't completely fucking exploitative? And just the way she kind of grabs him around the cuffs of his shirt and is ready to punch him out, I found very satisfying.
Yeah, and it's of interest because I do feel like she's like a lioness when she went forward fearless and very confident.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally believe she could have, like, taken him down. But it's of interest with the whole architect thing. I just don't believe she's an architect. And it's just, that's just a personal thing.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, it's like the contrast between, like, she's obviously a good actress and she can, like,
pull that off.
But the architecture scene, it's like, I'm not, is that a little bit bad writing? Like, that might be a little bit bad writing because she might have been boxed in by...
Yeah, that girlish hug and, like, the sort of... Because, yeah, again, knowing that if she's a good fit for that, for sure he might be a good client. But to sort of jump and hug like she's 12 and she likes him is a very odd reaction.
Because, like, my mom, for example, she isn't actually an architect, but she could have been. She really, really loves designing three-dimensional spaces. And this often happens, like, with her designing, like, the interior of our houses that we've lived in. But also, like, with the exterior, and, you know, when my parents bought our cottage, like, almost 20 years ago now, like, my mother put an extension on, she, like, rebuilt the dock, she and my cousin, Tony, they built the gazebo that's outside our house, like, and so, I'm just imagining what my mother would be like, and if somebody asked her to do that, she'd be like, oh my god, yeah, here's what I see. I see this, and this, and this, and here are our possibilities, you know what I mean? Like, somebody would be kind of in that headspace, and, like, full of suggestions and full of kind of, like, wanting to hear about what this person wanted. And there was none of that from Karen.
Yeah.
Like, it was really just like, oh my god, and then she jumps up and down.
The vibe was almost as if she was, like, a student fresh out of school and someone was giving her an opportunity.
Yeah.
Or she'd always wanted to be an architect and someone was like, yeah, I don't know, like, taking a chance on her or something almost. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. So I do think that that's writing and directing then. Like, do you know what I mean? It's more of the way that it was put together. But I guess because it's so well crafted, I always think it must be deliberate somehow.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Well, or, you know, I mean, it can kind of be somewhere in between where, like, I'm constantly amazed that this show seems to, as far as I can tell at this point, is written and directed by men.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I find is actually very critical of a lot of the men in the show and the kind of douchey, cliched behaviors they fall into, and is even kind of critical of Hank. Mm-hmm. Is critical of Hank and is a bit sympathetic to Hank, but sympathetic to Hank in a way that, like, so for example, I was really struck by the opening scene with him and Becca, and Becca's reading some poetry and he's talking to her and then he's teasing her a bit about the poem that she chooses. And she confesses that she likes the poem because she likes that it's, like, very pessimistic about love. And that's where she is emotionally. And the way that David Duchovny is looking at Becca, like, there's just this, like, beautiful kind of, like, glow he has where he obviously loves being a dad. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's very, very good at it. And he's very, like, he's very present and he's, like, very interested in her. And, like, that's something that Bill is not, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's, the series is trying to get us to see certain qualities in Hank that I think are not held up as traditional masculine virtues.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and his, the way he never is entitled to women, and the way that he's constantly, like, ribbing Charlie about his dishonesty, and the way that Hank is not, like, a bro-y, normal, masculine way. And so, again, it's, like, those pickup artists who laud Hank as, like, one of their icons. It's, like, you guys don't see what you're supposed to be seeing here. Mm-hmm. What the actual show is inviting us to see. And yet, now and then, I think they really just drop the fucking ball on, like, scenes with Karen in it, for example. Like, I think maybe somebody just didn't register how that was going to come off. Because you're right. Like, it's like the rest of it's very thoughtful. Like, it's really pulling you into seeing certain things. And yet Karen is so watered down that it's very frustrating. Because I want to think she's cooler. And I want to think she's a bit more kind of intelligent and self-possessed than she comes off a lot of the time. Because half the time we see her with Hank. Hank these days. She's just being very coquettish and very kind of flirty and very, like, you know, giggly as he kind of flirts with her.
Yeah, we saw that again a lot in this episode, actually. Yeah, it is almost like some part of Karen is just in this two-dimensional, like, girlish mode.
Mm-hmm. Hank is so devastated at the end when Becca basically says fuck you because she's so frustrated with constantly, like, what her mother's frustrated with. The reason that Karen left, which is that, like, it is very difficult to get Hank to focus and, like, follow through on something.
I feel like now, because I'd commented that the first episodes, Becca's lines felt like she was delivering lines. Today, I felt like it was the Becca that I remembered, where she's just dropped into herself. And I think that's a bit of the writing and a bit of, you know, she is very young, like, just sort of starting the series as well. Today was really heartbreaking when you could see palpably how much she is jealous of Mia now. And then when Hank chose Mia so clearly in that moment, it was really heartbreaking. And I felt like she really showed that very, very clearly. Yeah, I was just thinking back to the scene with Mia and the teacher. Yeah, even just the way that when they got there, Mia was, like, sort of lying down with her skirt pulled up and her legs open. Like, just, I feel like anybody else would have, even if she was there, even if that whole thing, like, sit her up and, like, not have her on display in that weird way. So it is a very, he was really unbelievably creepy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I wanted Karen to punch him out. Oh, my God. But, yeah, I'm also kind of very aware of how much this series really is drawing our attention again and again in different ways to the harsh contrasts between people's fantasies about things and the mundane, banal realities of how people are and what happens when people are people. Because to go back to the Charlie Marcy runkling.
The runkling.
I mean, it's funny because it almost starts off looking a bit like a porno. And then it ends up just in this ridiculous scene where Charlie gets his nipple ripped off, right? Like, it's just the most ridiculous. Only Charlie and Marcy could have swung that.
And the clip got, like, caught on her underpants. Isn't that what it was? Like, it was something.
I think so. It's, like, very, like, yeah. She certainly wasn't holding it. Like, no, she didn't realize it was connected to her.
Yeah.
Also, like, you know, the ways that Becca is becoming disillusioned about love, because she begins with, you know, you can see that she has some, like, fantasy that maybe her parents are going to get back together. And she probably still harbors that, but she doesn't know what to do with it because Hank keeps fucking up and not living up to her ideal of what she wants him to be.
It was of interest as well, because we had mentioned before when Bill came to talk to Hank about talking at Mia's school in that previous episode. Remember, he was kind of clueless to the signs that Hank might, there might be something. I just noticed that Karen, on the other hand, because all she said was, oh, Hank, you're here, you came or something. He's like, what? Like, and she just was, like, right dropped in and, like, what does that mean, you came? And I feel like she, like, right away sort of was like, that's it.
Yeah.
Noticed it.
That's a really good point. Yeah. Whereas Bill is just totally checked out. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just thinking, too, again, of this actual storyline. Like, poor Mia, that she keeps going back to that creep. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then sort of trying to get Hank to come. And then I feel like there's maybe a second layer, like, Hank didn't come. And then she maybe took more pills and then called Karen. Do you know what I mean? But it just escalates it. And it's, that's a very sad situation.
Yeah. And Mia is not getting the attention at home that she needs. I think that kind of there are parallel things happening with Mia and Becca where neither of them feels seen. Because that's, I think, a bit why Becca's pissed off at the end, too. Like, she's jealous of Mia, but she's also just like, I'm here. Like,
yeah. Well, I guess, too, with her crush on the guitar teacher, again, she was, like, wiped. By the time she brought out her little mixed CD,
yeah.
Mia was already in her bikini with her flirty ways. So that, she, well, you're right, she was invisible in that. And then her dad chooses Mia over her in that evening.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. I guess Bill's just always working when he's not
Bill's
there
actually on a vacation right vacation. Now. He gets back, I think, at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's conveniently away so that we get these moments between Hank and Karen.
Yeah, because they do, I mean, they always seem very comfortable there, even when I think he is around. But yeah. They do seem exceptionally flirty and comfortable.
Yes.
And I know he does that again when he's there, but he's always going in the gate, like in the backyard, and he does, yeah, he seems...
Yeah. I think that's got to be just like a convention of the families.
Yeah.
Like, I had an aunt where that was the case. Like, you could just go in to her, where her pool was and kind of go in the back door that way when she lived in her old house.
Yeah, definitely. I guess I did notice that when Karen came over to get Becca, she rang the doorbell, and he was always shown just going in. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, just there was... I liked the last moment between Karen and Hank where she's like, let this be a lesson to you, Hank Moody. And he's like, what? Why are you accusing me? She's like, I'm just teasing, like... And then she says, you're such a great dad. It's one of the sexiest things about you. And he just sort of, like, leans into her. And it's like... It's another beautiful moment of, like, their kind of history. Like, you can just feel palpably the kind of physical and emotional intimacy between these people and how Becca does bring them together.
Yeah. I do remember that moment. What was the joke that she made? Like, what, yeah.
Oh, I think she just said, like, this should be a lesson to you. Oh, because Hank was starting to slightly defend, the teacher, because it's not really defensible, but just say, it might not be quite how black and white as it appeared to you. And Karen's like, of course, you're taking the side of the pervert. And he's like, God, somebody's got to stand up for the perverted common man. And she's like, let this be a lesson to you. And she's like, and he suddenly gets paranoid. And he's like, well, why, what are you accusing me of? And she's like, I'm not accusing you of anything. She's just teasing him.
Do you think the tease, though, is because he does date a lot of younger women? Like, yeah. It was like a real tease, yes, but not meant to, like, take him down kind of thing.
Yeah. Or just that he dates a lot of women and that sometimes you can kind of accidentally end up in a situation like this, which, you know, calls out the fact that, like, I mean, what Karen doesn't know yet, but the fact that he did sleep with Mia and it did happen to him. So it's like, Karen knows this guy really well. I love, that was one of my favorite moments of the episode, was that moment between Karen and Hank.
Yeah. These episodes do seem very Karen and Hank focused.
Yeah.
And if you would watch and not pay attention, it actually fully looks like they're a couple and just a family, like just looking at it.
Yep.
Which I know they did deliberately, especially when in the last episode, Hank was in Bill's funny polo outfit sitting at the table there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to keep thinking about Karen and why the architecture thing seemed so two-dimensional, because that really sticks out.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think that's all I have to say.
It, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Nice short episode.
Lovely.
All right. Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in yet again. If you would like to help us out, you can go on to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, as it's now known, and leave us a rating or a review.
Yes.
It will help boost our podcast.
Great thing to mention. And perhaps we should also say that we are interested in any thoughts or comments via email.
Yeah. Or on our Facebook page.
Or on our Facebook page. She's got to have it! Exclamation mark. Mm-hmm. That's the Facebook page name.
Yay. Yeah, you can send us a personal message, or maybe can people post on there? I don't know.
Yeah, I think anyone can post on the Facebook page.
You can also send us personal messages and we will read them.
Yes.
All right. Well, great. On that note, now that we've said it, we gotta get it. Woo! I can't hide a rug on the rug. Couple kids said they wanna go. Change the sheets, but I can still tell. Try for love.